Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of South Geek News. Today is, what is it, March 19th? This is episode 13, and we have a special guest with us yet again. Of course, I am Donovan. That is
I am Ben.
That is Ben. And we have Samuel Lewis
with us. Hello, everybody.
Once again. He felt sorry for us. He listens to the podcast and he's like, y'all need some pizzazz.
Those two lonely bastards need a friend.
They need a friend, you know, so
two old men need some vitality in the room.
Oh, wow. He just called you old.
I think he just called himself young.
Trust me, I work with kids in my career currently. If I ever need a spot check on that one, they make sure I get it. So
all right, so Sam has been with us one time before, and I think it was last year. Matter of fact, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was December when I had COVID.
You had COVID, that's mm-hmm. right. So as I joked with him before you got here, instead of asking him, hey, Sam, what have you done in the last 2 weeks? Hey, Sam, what have you done since last year?
All sorts of stuff, projects. I have a wrestling podcast now, all sorts of things like that. But since this is a tech podcast, I figured I'd tell you guys about two new pieces of tech that I've acquired recently. One that Ben might actually find really interesting because it also has an API going on. I'm technically a beta tester for it. But the way you get in the beta test is essentially you use it. And then that's the beta test. So I have on my arm a little black, because this is audio only, a little black and yellow thing that is, it looks like a fitness band, almost like a Fitbit.
That's what I was going to say. It looks like a Fitbit.
Yeah, but it's called a B-E-E. No fancy 2.0 spelling. Thank God. It's just B-E-E. Dang it. Get on another rant at some point. But what this thing does is it connects to your phone. Currently, it only works with iPhones. So that's the thing. It is currently only iPhone connected.
That's okay.
But what it does is when you need it, because some people have it just listen to them all the time. The way that I use it is I keep it on mute until I want it to pay attention to a conversation. But essentially, it listens to conversations and makes notes. Yeah, it runs it through an AI algorithm and stuff like that. Like currently, because it's in beta, it's $50 and they're not charging you for API pulls. You know, like so instead of going, oh, this conversation, we're going to charge you for that. But instead, it's like, nah, we're not going to charge you monthly for this because you're literally beta testing this for us. So expectations, realize that it is a beta testing. You kind of have to train it a little bit. It's got a interface in an app where you can tell it, oh, this is this person. Like you train it on your voice, but you can also train it on other people's voices. So at some point it will start labeling people in your conversations and stuff like that. I've used it for podcast summaries.
So when I speak, it'll go, oh, that's asshole.
How did you know that I put your name in there like that? Yeah,
it'll know who you are and just ignore everything you say.
Well, as it should.
But like the way that I've also been using it to summarize classes because brain no work good sometimes, epilepsy kicks in. Yeah. So I've been using it to summarize classes. And the way I've been doing it is the silliest little hack ever. I take one of my cans because I also have two other sets of headphones attached to my rig because I've got a 3-mic setup, kind of like you've got. Mm-hmm. I take one of them, take it down from the boom mic arm, put it on the desk, and just nuzzle this thing in one of the ears. And because you can control it remotely from the app on the phone too and mute it and unmute it. So you can pull all that stuff off while it's nuzzled somewhere you need it to be nuzzled. So BEE to get a hold of the device. Last time I checked, it was just like $50, which I say just, but it's one of those things where compared to something else, like I think some of the other ones that are more established and you have to pay like a monthly thing for them are like several $100. So like, this thing's fairly cheap, as it were.
Do you know the website?
I can get that for you. Because
so, I was looking up, and the first thing that hits is beekeeper.io.
Yeah, that is the problem with it being so nicely named. When we're having other conversations, when I can, you know, pop to the side, I will give you that information.
Sure.
And then the other piece technology.
Sorry. Oh. I think I found it. B.computer, your new wearable personal AI.
That's probably it.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Sam. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, B.computer then. And so far, the thing's been great. I mean, it's going through its growing pains because, again, it's beta. So you kind of expect that. So there's some times where you look at the notes and go, where the heck did you get that from? And stuff like that. But it also does give you a transcript of everything. It doesn't keep the audio. Essentially, the way they've explained it is it runs it through what it needs to run it through, and then it deletes the audio. So if people have privacy concerns and stuff like that, but I am not nerdy enough to do this, but it does have API things that you can do stuff with. So Ben, knowing that he experiments with this stuff all the time, I thought that might be appealing to Ben.
Hey, the next batch ships March 21st. You're in luck. all right.
And then the other thing that I got a hold of is a thing called a brick. Again, only iOS. But what this thing does, it is essentially tapping into the, you know how iOS has that screen time function inside of it where you can lock stuff off if you want to control yourself and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem with that is that if you set that up on your phone and you still have your phone beside you, like say you're, doing college level master's work. I don't know why I would think of that. But if you got it still sitting there and you want to control yourself, the problem is that you can reach over, go into the screen time software and go, get the heck out of here, and then do anything you want to do. It really doesn't control things that much. This thing, which is about the size of my palm and a little bit above it, so it's like a little half a cube, almost, I guess the best way to put it. It's got an RFID tag inside of it. And it's magnetic, too, so you can stick it on metal surfaces. But essentially, it adds a physical object aspect to that whole process. So you essentially brick your phone, except for the things in whatever mode you put it in that you need for it. So you can totally customize different modes for, I'm studying my homework right now, so I want these specific apps because these are part of my homework, like my Outlook and things like that, because I still get school emails. But I don't need distractions by all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either set it up by apps you allow or apps that you get rid of if you want to just lock down specific apps. Because I have a wind down routine in this for whenever I'm getting ready for bed, too, that I use this thing for.
Did you say it connects to the phone with MagSafe?
No,
it doesn't. So it doesn't connect to the phone at all?
No, it's just an RFID tag inside of this thing with a piece of software that runs everything to lock the specific things that you want to lock without you doing it manually.
So if I get it far enough away from the phone, then it will stop working.
It doesn't. The point is you just put it wherever you want to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go inside the app, tap a button, and then you tap it to the brick because, you know, RFID tag reading and everything. Mm-hmm. And then it locks everything up. And in order to unlock it, there are some emergency unlocks if you need it. Stuff happens. But you tap the button again and then tap the brick and everything's back to normal.
Hmm.
So it unlocks everything. So essentially what I do whenever I'm studying, because I'm here, my refrigerator is halfway through my trailer. So I'm not going to have the motivation to, I want to get on TikTok. Guess what? I have to walk all the way to the refrigerator to do it. I'm not that motivated.
So I take this thing,
put it on the refrigerator, and the thing that is keeping my phone bricked up so that I'm focusing on studying is now in my refrigerator, and I have to physically go to it in order to unlock something. So helps with self-control, in other words.
Okay.
So yeah.
How much was that device?
I think it's like around 50 as well, if I'm not mistaken. But
you know, that's an investment when you can just say, no, I'm not gonna do the phone. I'm not going to pick it up. Put the the phone in the refrigerator. I mean, no.
You know, because if I didn't need the phone for specific things, because there is actually like a chat thing that my classmates use. So I have to have the phone on me. It's not like I could just leave it somewhere.
Okay.
And be fine. And I turn off the notifications and stuff like that. So, you know, it's that situation where I have to have it on me. I realize it's a niche, but it's a niche that I've fixed. And if I'm on another time, I will tell you how insane I have been going making different study situations, because I've been testing all sorts of pieces of software for productivity and study and stuff like that to figure out the best method with me with Pomodoro timers and all sorts of stuff. So that's another time. But this was a piece of hardware. Donovan's already annoyed. This was a piece of hardware that I used to make part of that process. So.
No, I'm just every time somebody says the Pomodoro stuff, and I'm like, that's just so bougie. That's
yeah, like, but for someone, but for someone with a epilepsy problem like I do, it freaking works.
Hey, like, you know, I'm not gonna knock it. If it works for you, that's fine. I've tried it before. No, does not work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm pretty confident I have undiagnosed ADHD. So it is no, just no.
You know how you could get that diagnosed? No, I'm kidding. I'm not about to do that on
Let
here.
Let me tell you something about my health insurance.
I know. Trust me, as someone that will be advocating for people in the future, I'm pissed about it too. Okay, so that's.
Hey, all I'll say is this. So I get my health insurance. Or I did get it through healthcare.gov. Now that Georgia has their own, you have to go and basically you have to do it through Georgia. And what they did last year is they took your healthcare.gov and they transitioned it over. So you didn't really have to do much other than go in, fill out some stuff and say, well, of course I want the same plan that I had last year. And of course I want you to charge me more. But no. So we all know how this process works. You know, the government basically kicks in if the plan you go with costs $2,000 a month in premiums, they'll look at your income and they'll kick in however much. Let's say it could be $1,800, it could be $1,900, whatever. So they base it on the previous year's income. So as the aforementioned problem that I was telling Sam, before you got here, Ben, about my tax situation and how I wound up owing $5,500 more than what I thought. Part of that $5,500 is they're clawing back $1,900 of overpayments on my health insurance because they based it on $5,000 less of income than what I actually wound up doing in 2024. Mm-hmm. So, and it would have been $2,300, but apparently there's a cap. There's a $1,900 cap that they could only claw back so much. So yeah, don't talk to me about insurance.
No, insurance sucks. As someone that's getting into this game, I'm sitting there going, freaking hate it.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Let me help people for peace sakes.
I mean, I pay $130-something a month now for a plan that has a $17,000 deductible. And I pay $33 for my daughter, whose plan is basically the same thing. And last year, I was paying $18 for hers and $75 for ours. So that's how much they've gone up. And I have seriously considered just dropping and not having health insurance again. But I know that if I have a heart attack, I guess it's better to owe $17,000 than it is to owe $117,000, but it's not like they're going to get it out of me anyway. You know, unless something changes with this administration, health bills no longer go on your credit report. Anyway, back to the tech podcast. So, Sam, interesting. I like the little wrist thing, the B thing. I have no use for the other thing. Yeah. But again, if it works for you, that's great.
I get it. That's the second one's very niche. The thing you'd have to know a use case for it before you'd use it. Definitely.
Yeah. So. I mean, I'm too old to study now, so I don't need to worry about that. So I mean, he did call us old.
Right.
Yeah, he did.
Just lean into it.
Yeah, I'm just going to lean into it. You know, I mean, hell, I joined AARP 5 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't been getting the mailings yet.
I pay $14 a year for me and Lee. Hmm. What benefit do I get out of it? I get a magazine. You're a
card carrier.
And I get emails that talk about, you know, how Social Security is going down the shitter and all of that. You know, great stuff. Reference previous Call Me Donovan podcast. Anyway. okay. So is that it for you, Sam?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Ben. Last 2 weeks. Go.
There's no way I can remember everything I did.
So what you're telling me is you need one of those B wrist thingies.
I just ordered one. It's on the way.
See, this is what he does. This is what he does.
No, I like that. I want to record everything because I forget.
So you want your own personal big brother?
No, just a little brother on my wrist.
Little brother on my wrist. Okay, what can you remember?
This morning.
Okay. Did you change the drive out in the QNAP?
No. It's not a critical system. And I'm going to blow everything away anyway, but the array is in read-only while it's degraded. So I can't clear space to do stuff, but the volume's full and there's a bad drive. But nobody needs anything. I stopped backing up to that thing last year. And so it's just stale.
So it's cold storage, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I needed to go pick up a package that never arrived, so I just didn't go to town.
Where'd you pick the package up?
UPS store.
But that's in town.
No, I had to go because it was supposed to be here yesterday. I assumed it would be here today.
Mm-hmm.
Two packages left Atlanta Monday night. One got here yesterday. The second one might be here Thursday.
Might.
So. So I broke and fixed the article summarizer this morning.
Yes, you did. I like how it broke and fixed. Oh, I also have to tell you, I don't know if this is something you also fixed, but the last article that I sent to it, the email I got back now is properly formatted because previous to that, it was HTML code.
Yeah, I changed the email to be encoded as HTML rather than plain text
because
it's the same content that goes to the blog post.
Right.
It goes in the email.
Right.
So I did make that change.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that come back in and I was like, oh, cool. So yeah, it's a nice little thing. And since it is public, but public for just us, that way I didn't have to do any special stuff like I did for the other one for Sam to be able to get into it.
Yeah.
I had it tunneled in but I had it where this is the cool thing about some of the stuff. I don't know how much you've played around with Cloudflare. But their zero trust stuff is the shit. Hmm. So I have certain things. I run a small VM that runs their service here. And I do it at a couple of different clients so that if I don't have a VPN to say like get into the Proxmox server or something, I can do it through zero trust tunnels. And I've got it set up to where it only works on certain email addresses. Like I've got a client that if I drive up to the domain that I have for their Proxmox, I have to put in an email address. It emails me a code. I put the code in and that's how I gain access. Hmm. If you don't know my email address, and it's not going to matter because it's going to come to me anyway. So if you just arbitrarily put in, say, your Gmail address, it's going to kick back and go, we don't recognize that. You don't have access to this. So I had set that up for Sam to be able to get into the articles thing. That way somebody didn't just accidentally decide to do a DNS query dump of everything southgeeknews.com and go, oh, what is this? And drive up to it because I locked your email, mine and his to it. Of course, now that's for naught. You destroyed all my hard work within a matter of hours. I want you to know.
How many hours did you work on it?
20 minutes. 20 minutes getting it going and then having Sam test it. That was it.
The one thing I love about it, though, I am so glad that Donovan told me, oh, that my take section is an AI-generated section, because I swear it has the cadence of a YouTuber that's trying to get hits. I'll just tell you that. It's like,
it is amusing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you kept playing around with that, trying increasing the level of snark or something at one point.
Well, I had it get too nerdy. It was just making Linux jokes all the time.
Oh, and yeah.
They were bad dad jokes.
Yeah.
So I had to calm that down.
I know, because basically every time it would start out as a Linux user myself. Because
I told it to be insufferable about it.
It was.
It was.
Oh. And this is using Claude, not
correct.
ChatGPT.
Yep. Claude, it's nailing it.
Yeah.
Some of the insight.
I like it. I like it. Sometimes I actually pull some of my thoughts from my take just because it's like, I mean, I like this last sentence of this one. It was like, and let's be honest, if you're tech savvy enough to run a Plex server, you can probably figure out how to set up a VPN to make everything appear, quote, local. Anyway, not that I'm suggesting that, winks in Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for my last 2 weeks, I got a couple of things. One, finally wrapped up a second client today with the SIP trunk. Last Wednesday, which was supposed to be the original port date, they were like, hey, can we just test? And I'm like, okay, sure, let's test. Because your parent company has not done an actual SIP trunk configuration since 2015. So sure, let's test. We tested, everything worked great. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly the way SIP trunks are supposed to work. So I didn't hear anything. The port date was today. We're porting three numbers. And I got with my sales guy and I was like, okay, what's the deal? And he's like, because he had told me they were going to talk about it at their 2 o'clock meeting on Monday. He said, yeah, everything's a go. I'm like, that's great. I still need this information, this information, this information. Long story short, when you actually get two people on a phone that know exactly how things work, things go a lot smoother. And so he got on the phone with me this morning, gave me the credentials. I changed the credentials in the trunk, changed the main number. We tested the DIDs. And then I even went to one of the free fax services online and tested the fax, because the way I've got theirs working is I talked to them last week and I'm like, do y'all even use this fax machine? Y'all send faxes? And they're like, no. How often do you get a fax? I can't remember the last time we got one. I'm like, okay, so if you need to send anything, you do like most modern people do, and you scan to email from your fancy Canon copier over mm-hmm. here. And they're like, exactly. I'm like, okay. So their fax number still works, but it comes into the 3CX system, which then converts it to a PDF and then emails it to a shared mailbox for the parts department. Mm. So that took about 30 minutes. Got all that going, everything. And matter of fact, they've even told me, one of the parts guys, because I emailed him and said, okay, everything's transitioned. And he emailed me back and he said, thank you. That delay is gone. Because this had to come off of a MediaCom cable modem, which means it was analog coming out of the modem. Then it had to go into a Grandstream unit, which converted it from analog to data to go into the 3CX. And so when I removed all of that, and it's just a straight SIP trunk to a switch that's less than 60 miles away, the delay went away. That's good. I did tell my sales rep last week that I would no longer be doing telephone service with them for any of my clients, though, because the menagerie of bullshit that I had to go through just to do something as simple as fire up a SIP trunk and get numbers ported took 2 fucking months to get done. So,
sheesh.
Yeah, I'm not doing that again. And it all comes down, unfortunately, to the local guys knowing exactly what needs to happen. All right. Because when I first did this with a larger client back in 2017, other than some access issues, went off without a hitch, not a problem. Well, the corporate entity that bought the local company, as I pointed out, and as I was told, hasn't actually configured a SIP trunk since 2015. They didn't know how to do it. They didn't have a process in place to do it. The sales guy sold a service that the corporate headquarters went, we don't know how to do this. And I'm like, but your local folks do. And they're like, yeah, but we got to create all these processes and procedures. And, you know, there's about 10 different people need to be involved in this chain. And I'm like, okay, well, that's your problem, not mine. So, yeah, that's the reason why. Is it good that it's the Metaswitch is local? Yes. But if I have to go through this menagerie of bullshit again just to get a SIP trunk fired up and everybody trying to go, oh, well, you need this piece of equipment and you need this piece of equipment. And I'm like, I need you to give me a user ID. I need you to give me a password. I need you to put these DIDs in this list. And I need you to shut the fuck up is what I need for you to do. And then we'll start paying the bill. So got that done. Over the last 2 weeks, I upgraded the connections. Might have been past last 2 weeks. I know one we got upgraded to fiber, faster fiber. And then another one we got upgraded. And so I upgraded the firewalls. Remember, I sent you the picture of the NetGate 4200. Mm-hmm. Well, what I discovered, unfortunately, I'd already put it in place, and then I got to looking at it, and I had ordered the 4200 Max, which comes with 128 gig NVMe. The regular one comes with 16 gigs of internal storage. What they sent me was the one with the 16 gigs of internal storage. So I went through the process of opening up a ticket with NetGate, and I got to say, their support is top-notch. I don't have any complaints there. So I did have to go and take a picture of the label on the bottom of it so that I could prove what I actually had. And they already had the order that showed what was supposed to have been sent out. And so somewhere along the line, somebody grabbed the wrong unit and put it in the box. And so I think it was last Friday, they hit me up and said, okay, well, we're going to do an exchange. Here's a label. Need you to send that one back. And I said, let me be clear. We have two options here. As I have stated before, this unit is being used. It's in service. So you can either cross ship me one, or you can just credit back the difference between the two. Because honestly, the 16 gigs working, but it's not what they bought. It's not what the client paid for. Mm-hmm. Monday morning, I got an email and it says, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you couldn't ship it back. I'm going to see what I can do for you. A few minutes later, they were like, we're sending you one. Just as soon as you get it, use that label I sent you to ship the old one back. I'm like, cool. It came in today. It's sitting right there.
Nice.
And matter of fact, it came in probably about an hour and a half ago. So tomorrow I will fire it up and get it configured. And then probably Sunday I'll go back out there and I'll just do a quick swap and then, you know, send it back. These are nice little units. I mean, they're expensive for what they are, but that thing has just been rocking and rolling up. They were using a 2100 and the CPU utilization on it was staying at about 60 to 70%. The 4200 is sitting there at 9. Because the 2100 still use, the name of the processors, like what's in, not in our phones, but like in Android phones. Not the Snapdragon, but the type of processor it is.
ARM?
ARM, yes. Yeah. So it uses an ARM processor that's got like two cores. The 4200s, you may look at it and laugh, but they're actually Celerons. But they're Intel Celerons with like four cores or something. So they kick the dog shit out of the ARM. And so I was like, now that they've got gig at each spot, that was the problem I was looking at, is where the 2100 was sitting was like the main hub for the remote office to come in, plus all of the 60-something workstations that were there. And I was like, the 2100's not rated at routing, but about 700 megabit. And I was like, I think I need something bigger. This one's rated at routing like 3 gigabit or something. So that was my 2 weeks. I don't think anything else crazy happened. Now that was the previous time when I talked about getting pulled over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I need to order one of those too.
See? I ship March 21.
That's right.
All I'll say is program the button to say, okay, conversation over with, because you do have to manually do that. But otherwise, you're good.
I'm going to leave it on.
How much storage does it have?
It's okay. It does have to have an active internet connection. So if you go into a dead zone, there's a problem. But
it connects to your phone?
Yeah.
It gets its internet through the phone.
The work.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, most places in South Georgia, we're either on Wi-Fi or we have decent 5G. Most places.
There's a spot on my driveway.
One spot in your driveway that you can get. Yeah. Occasionally, I'll get one bar of 5G here. And when I do, it's amazing. It'll do like 30 megabit on a speed test. But as soon as it goes back to LTE, it's like, you wanted internet? It's like, no, that's the reason why I have gigabit here and Wi-Fi all over the damn place.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, and then we'll get to the stories. A couple of years ago, because, you know, we're coming up on almost 2 years now when we did those 20-something trees that Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, I guess this fall will be.
Yeah, the September will be 2 years. You were standing out in that, what we call the undead patch, and you were like, can I get any fucking internet here? So not long after you did that, and I got to noticing that I was losing my connection when I was on the lawnmower because I'll stream like YouTube music or something. And so there is a Wi-Fi 6 access point on the other side of the sunroom. It's been there almost a year now. It just blasts that entire area. You can actually go down about, we tested it, you can walk down the road probably about a half a football field and still get signal. You'll be down in like the 10 megabit range or something like that. But yeah, after you did that and after I started having issues, I was like, the hell with this. I need more internet over here. I need more music. All right, let's get to these stories. So the first one that we have up is, and I added this one late today because it came across a couple of my feeds. And then I was looking at Slashdot and actually saw it on there. So I was like, eh, this might be interesting. But neither one of you two actually run a Plex server that I'm aware of.
I don't.
Okay. No. I'm really the only one that's like, arr, a pirate. Anyway, I have run Plex for a number of years. And I pay monthly for their Plex Pass. Now, I got a friend of mine years ago who actually did the lifetime thing, which I think was $100 and something, $149 or whatever, and you didn't have to pay again. But I was like, nah, I'll just pay the monthly. Anyway, what they've announced is in April of this year, they are doing their first price increases in over 10 years. So the Plex Pass is going to $6.99 a month. It's $69.99 if you pay for the year. Or if you want to come out of pocket $250 and not have to pay ever again, you can do that. One of the things that they're also doing is previously remote playback of your personal media was free. And what that means is that, let's say you're on a trip, you get into a hotel room and you've been watching Supernatural and you want to watch some of that and you've got it on your Plex server. Well, you could stream it across to your laptop, app on your phone or whatever. No harm, no foul. But now, if you want to be able to do that, you got to pay. You got to have a Plex Pass. So they kind of put that behind the walled garden, if you will. The new remote watch pass subscription option is $1.99 a month. But they used to have a one-time fee for the mobile app. They are no longer doing that. So that's now free. I guess they figure, well, if they're going to ding you for being able to watch your stuff remotely, they might as well not charge you for the app itself. And new features coming, including common sense media integration and improved server management tools, which one thing I wish they would fix on the server side. So you can run Plex on a Windows machine or you can run it on a Linux machine. It's better to run it on a Linux machine because it will auto start on a Linux machine. You have to get a separate app or you have to do some scripting or something to actually get it to fire off automatically if you reboot a Windows machine. It will not, by default, it will not make itself a service, but there are applications out there that you can make it become a service, which I think I actually have it running on the Windows box because I run two. I run Plex 1 and Plex 2. Plex 2 is just mainly for me to screw around with. It's on that little machine sitting on the wall right over there. It will auto update. You can actually drive up to it. Matter of fact, the other day I was watching something on my television and I happened to be on Plex 2 and it's like, hey, there's an update. You want to do this now or you want to do it tonight? I'm like, eh, do it tonight. That's cool. the Linux version of it, you have to manually update. You have to go and wget the file off their server and then do basically a Debian package upgrade. Hmm. It won't do it automatically. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute. So the Windows version, you can drive up even in the web interface. You can drive up to the web interface and it'll do a little thing at the top and says, hey, there's an update available. You can click it and it'll update itself on a Windows machine. But yet you can't make it a service so that it'll auto start if the machine restarts. But on Linux, it'll automatically launch as a service, but you can't automatically upgrade it through the web interface. What is wrong with this picture? So, not that you guys really care because, like I say, you don't have a Plex machine, but I tell you, Plex, I know there's another one out there called Jellyfin that apparently does the same type of stuff, but it's, I think it's free, but I've never used it. Mm. All right. And the crowd goes wild because y'all couldn't give two shits about Plex. All right. Okay.
My house is so small, I don't have a use for it. Like, I am here, and as soon as I walk out the door of my studio, there is my living room. That's how small that transfer window is.
I know, but the point is if you've got a smart TV or any type of smart device like an Apple TV or a Fire Stick or a Roku or whatever, you install the Plex app on that device, and let's say that you have some DVDs or Blu-rays that you legally made rips of, because you can legally make rips of them and put them in digital format on a machine, then you don't have to have a DVD player or a Blu-ray player because, well, they're not making them anymore. But, and then you can just go to this nice slick interface and it's like, oh yeah, I want to watch Batman, or I want to watch, you know, whatever, the 4-hour version of Justice League, because nobody talks about the shitty Justice League. So that's what it's for. Mm. Or television shows that you can't get anywhere else and you have to go to, I don't know, Sweden and find them. Mm. Not like I would ever do such a thing. All my stuff is above board and legal. Okay, talking about Roku. So apparently they are looking at, they're testing autoplay ads loading before the home screen. So according to this, they're testing a new feature where video advertisements automatically play before users can access their device's home screen. Either one of you have a Roku TV or a Roku device?
I have a Roku device, but I haven't turned it on in probably a couple of years.
Oh, it's no good. Throw it away. So you got a TV, Sam?
Yes. I've got one of the, I think the brand is TCL that always has the, and I've got one of the little Roku Express things too.
All right. Cool.
On a thing in the bedroom. So
users, well, you may start seeing this then. Users have reported seeing ads, particularly for Moana 2, with some noting a close option that isn't always visible. A close option. If I could speak today, you know, just kill me now.
And then we'll fix it in post.
Fix it in post. So Roku confirmed that it is a test. They're describing it as exploring, quote, new ways to showcase brands and programming. So for the layperson, how to screw you and make more money off of advertising. That's exactly what it is. The company already displays static ads on their home screen, but this move toward auto-playing video ads has sparked significant user backlash. Well, of course, many folks are threatening to abandon their Roku devices if this becomes permanent. I mean, I would.
I would want to, yeah. This reminds me of that article that we may have not even talked about because the show got put off so many times, about Jeep playing ads on the infotainment screen.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
It really sounds like bullshit because I never saw a video of it, never read about any confirmed reports of it happening. But
I did.
It's believable from a company like Stellantis.
I did read some comments of some people who actually had to experience it. I say had to experience it, not just experience it. But yeah, it was when you got to a stoplight, it would start playing these ads on the screen.
That is nuts.
And you would literally have to get it to stop, you would have to reach up and interact with the display.
Right.
Which is a safety hazard.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't want to mess with Jeep people. If there is a group of people that is like in cars that is more passionate than perhaps other groups, Jeep people are definitely those people. You do not want to mess with Jeep people.
Those crazy folks and their ducks.
I mean, I remember that. Cute, I remember that. That was so crazy. It's like,
it's still a thing.
Yeah, it's still a thing.
Is it?
Dash yes. is full of rubber ducks. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think if my vehicle started playing ads, unless I got the vehicle at, I don't know, a quarter of what they wanted for it, you know, maybe my whole car was ad supported. If I paid full price and they're showing me ads and I don't have any way of changing that, disabling it, I believe it might accidentally catch on fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a bunch of Teslas have been.
With three quarters of a tank of fuel.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I don't look, if you go into a purchase knowing that it's ad supported, let's say, it's like the, I don't know if they still do this or not, but you could get a version of the Kindle. Matter of fact, I had one that was ad supported.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so
I think they might. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if I know that I'm getting a, let's say I'm getting a $30 or $40 discount off of the device because when I go to turn it on, I'm going to get an ad. Okay, I don't care. But if I buy this thing and then a year later, ads start showing up on the damn thing and I have no way of getting out of it, that's a terrible, terrible customer experience. And that's basically like a bait and switch. I mean, it's a shitty company that does that.
Yeah, I'd be like buying a Kindle at full price and then a couple of years later, every fourth page, there's a half page. Flashy banner ad from the 90s, probably with sound as you're trying to enjoy this story.
Yep. I'm reading it 2 a.m. and suddenly it starts blasting. My wife is now on the floor. Is it scared her? Yeah. Roku, don't do that. That's and that's another thing that irritates me. I want a non-smart television. I don't need all this extraneous BS in my television because I'm either going to use a Fire Stick or an Apple TV, one of these two devices. I don't need this. I mean, I do have a TCL, I think it's a 40 something inch Roku. It's got an Apple TV connected to it. So fortunately, when it powers up, it takes it about 5 seconds. It automatically comes up and selects the input. And then goes to the Apple TV. I never, ever interface with the Roku interface itself.
Yeah.
Except when I had to get the input set up for the Apple TV. The one we have in the bedroom is a 50-something inch Samsung. It's got its own smart internal BS. And I hate it. It drives me crazy. I wish there was a way I could just turn it off. I'm just like, give me... You know, we're at the point now where I just need to buy a 55-inch monitor.
Yeah. Like, I just need a display.
I just need a display. Yeah. I don't need all this other crap because I'm going to hook these other things up to it, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know of anybody that sells a television that is not a smart TV now.
I'm sure you can find them. You're probably not going to find one in the store.
I mean, I'm not going to buy it from a store anyway, but...
I don't know. I client replaced the TV on the wall. So they're set up in this office. They have a computer, which is basically a dual screen setup, but both screens are 42-inch TV. And it's just to display their surveillance cameras. There's 9 cameras on one screen, 9 cameras on the other screen. That's it. They're just on 24/7. So one of them burned out, and that's understandable. So they replaced it, and then they called me like, we can't get the picture on this. It's like, all right, I'll stop by. I'm not even going to ask you because I can't remote into that. You can't show me what it's doing.
Yeah.
So I show up and they had mounted the TV. They connected it properly. They knew what input to try to get to. It would not go to that input. And I went back and forth in the setup menu on what the hell's going on. I was like, never mind. I hit the reset button, like factory reset. Let's just start over as if I were here from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, first thing it wants to do is connect to Wi-Fi. And that is exactly what they did. And if it is connected to a network, it requires, Vizio requires that you create a fucking account to be able to use goddamn TV.
Oh my God.
There was no way out of it except to
reset,
not connect to any network. And then, oh, there we are. Here's your picture. It was extremely frustrating.
And this was a Vizio?
Yeah.
Which is now owned by Walmart.
Wow.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. I think they bought it last year.
Buying a TV company. I don't remember it being Vizio.
Yeah, it was Vizio.
That's too bad.
It is. Because Vizio is one of those brands that it's not top quality, but they're not bad for the money.
Yeah, for the money, it's a fantastic display.
Yeah.
The sound quality wasn't there, just from what I read. And well, when they first hit the market, they didn't have all the, you know, network connections and apps and shit in it.
Right. So. Supposedly, one of the reasons why Walmart bought the company is so that they could start stuffing the TVs with ads.
That checks out.
So, yep.
I think I'm going to have to find that client too. 42-inch monitor, made for digital signage, made to be on all the time.
Which means it's going to be three times as much as those televisions were.
As they'll last 10 years.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It's like, they'll last longer than I'm going to be in business. okay. I actually shared this one with Tyler because he works on this type of stuff for Amazon, the CAPTCHA and all. It says that weird CAPTCHA could be a malware trap. Here's how to protect yourself. So Malwarebytes has reported a new malware campaign that exploits the CAPTCHA verification system to infect users' computers. It works by presenting users with a fake CAPTCHA prompt on websites offering content like movies or music. And instead of that typical image verification where it's like, do you see, click all the squares that you see a car? Or a bicycle, or a motorcycle, or a train, or a stoplight. Or a
traffic light.
A traffic light, all of that. It presents unusual instructions that, when followed, allow malicious code to be copied to the Windows clipboard. This code then executes mshta.exe to download malware, typically Luma Stealer or Sectop Rat. I guess that's how you say that, which is designed to steal sensitive data. The attack relies on users' familiarity and comfort with CAPTCHA programs, making them less likely to question suspicious instructions. Except this actually has you copy and paste some stuff in the run box. I have never run into a CAPTCHA that I had to copy and paste shit into a run box on my machine.
Yeah. Let me get through this CAPTCHA so I can read this article at CNN.
Yeah. Let me copy this. Oh, that's a weird looking thing, but. Okay.
I guess I'll prove I'm human so I can read this New York Times article.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll put it in the run box.
Mm-hmm.
What could go wrong? Okay. I got to read my take on this one.
here we go.
Oh, the irony. A system designed to protect us from bots is now being weaponized to turn our computers into bots. I mean, this is particularly clever because it exploits that security professionals call security fatigue, that glazed over state we all enter when confronted with the millionth CAPTCHA of the day. It's like when you're so tired of saying no to cookies that you just start accepting them all. I mean, we've been trained like Pavlov's dogs to just click through these security prompts. What's especially devious about this attack is that it targets both ends of the user spectrum. Your less tech savvy users might fall for it out of simple confusion, while more experienced users might fall for it precisely because they're so used to dealing with CAPTCHAs that they do it on autopilot. No.
Nobody's pasting in the run box.
No, I'm autopilot. Sorry. I'm sorry. You're wrong, Claude. You're wrong. It's like, how an experienced driver might actually be more likely to run a familiar stop sign. They've done it so many times, they stop actively thinking about it. This is why we can't have nice things on the internet, folks. Claude is wrong on this one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not even a good metaphor.
You are wrong. I can guarantee you that someone who, I mean, we all have done this. Prove you're not a robot. Mm-hmm. You know, click, like we said, at no point in my existence and nobody in my family, because they have been trained better, would go, oh, well, this must be a newfangled way of doing a CAPTCHA. It's more secure. Let me copy and put this in the run box on my computer.
Who would even know what the run box is unless you're technical enough to know I shouldn't put something in the run box?
I think it tells you. I believe it tells you to do Windows R, which brings up the run box, and then copy and paste this thing in, because it presents itself like almost like a legitimate CAPTCHA.
What sites are they compromising to display that to the user?
Well, it says music and video sites. So that makes me wonder if they're talking about, well, the seedier side of the internet.
It's always the seedier side.
I mean, that's true. And sometimes it's fun to visit, but I wouldn't live there.
I've never been presented with a scareware page.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I've never seen one of these crazy captions.
You know, and if the programmer that wrote the article system actually, the last one I did about the last two that I did today actually have linked to article. The rest of them do not.
Yeah, I told you that on Discord. I was like, I fixed it, and it now has the link to the article.
Yeah, okay.
But that wasn't in there.
That wasn't in.
I thought somehow the title on the post would be the link. I was like, no, that's the link to the post itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I added that top of the post.
Well, I'll have the links in the show notes. Yeah. So it's over at ZDNet. Oh, now this one I love. This one I absolutely love. Windows 11 update accidentally erases Copilot for some users.
It's funny. We can't uninstall it enough times.
Exactly.
And then Microsoft rips it out for some folks.
Yeah. So it's a recent Windows 11 update, KB5053598. It was released on March the 11th. Accidentally uninstalled Microsoft's Copilot AI assistant and removed it from the taskbar for some users. Oh, could we not be so lucky that it would do it for everyone?
It's not a bug. No, it's a feature.
That is a feature. I hate Copilot. Every time I see it on a machine, I've started seeing it more over the last 2 weeks. I've been on machines and especially one of these where I reboot and then it goes through that, hey, let us help you finish setting up your machine. I'm like, this machine's been set up for a year. I don't need your help. So I'll click and click. And then it's like, it's taking its time. And I'm like, what is it doing? And suddenly, bam, in the middle of the screen, I got, welcome to Microsoft Office 365 or whatever, Copilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, no. So I immediately go into apps, uninstall the damn thing. So I don't know how long it'll be before it reinstalls itself.
Do you have the capability to run PowerShell scripts in your RMM?
Yes.
I think I'm eventually going to write a script to uninstall Copilot.
Mm-hmm.
Except for those folks who use it.
Yeah, matter of fact, there is a, through Enable, there is a script repository
mm-hmm.
that you can pretty much go and search for anything.
Yeah, somebody's already written one.
Somebody's already written it, and you just have to add it into your dashboard, and then you can, Because I've done that where I've got one script that I have automatically go against machines, and I actually have it run every couple of days to disable hibernation. Even though hibernation or sleep should only have to be disabled once. But for whatever reason, I have done this manually. And then suddenly, 6 months later, the machine starts going to sleep. So I've got one script that does that. And I think I've got another one that turns the firewall off or something. I don't know because it's irritating. I'm actually starting to change my attitude about that. Having firewalls on internal machines always drove me nuts because I was like, it's on the inside of the LAN. It doesn't need to be firewalled. But I'm thinking now it's whatever. As long as the necessary ports are open through the thing, I don't care anymore. But that's a good idea, though. Uninstalling the Copilot for sure.
Yeah, just have your RMM detected. Oh, Copilot's there.
Yeah, exactly.
So
So Microsoft is working on a fix. Users can restore Copilot. Why? Why would you? Download it from the Microsoft Store, run the executable, right-click the Copilot shortcut in the Start menu, and pin it to the taskbar. The issue only affects the standard Copilot app and not the Microsoft 365 version. Damn it! That's the one I've been fighting. This is one of several bugs affecting Windows 11, particularly 24H2 version, as Microsoft races to resolve stability issues before Windows 10 support ends in October. Microsoft, I've got an opinion. I've got a suggestion on how you can resolve your Windows 11 stability issues. Shit can it and go back to Windows 10 because it was a far superior OS.
I say they just brush up on their Linux chops and make 2025 the year of the Linux desktop.
Exactly.
But they'd fuck that up too.
Windows 12. No, Windows 13 will be Linux. It'll be complete. I mean, they've already got the Linux core stuff in there with WSL. The WSL and all of that. So let's just do it. Let's just do it.
Gamers like me F that idea up. So I'm sorry. It's my fault.
Well, see, that's what you do. Is you automatically incorporate, and I forget, there's a couple of different projects out there that work really well on Linux that will let you play Windows games. Mm-hmm. So that's what you do, is you come out with Windows 13. It's got a Debian core, because that is the most stable without all the bloatware. And then you add that other, kind of like Rosetta was in Mac OS, when they were transitioning from Intel over to the M-series processors, mm-hmm. so that if stuff wasn't written to work on both of them, you had to emulate for the Intel, so you had the Rosetta that automatically. So you add that into your Windows 13 Linux so that it just automatically will run Windows games. It's a win-win.
They could just put a couple million bucks into Wine.
Yeah, Wine is one of them, yeah. Yeah, that's right. There's another one.
True. There's the Steam thing that they run on Steam Deck would probably make that work.
Yeah.
So,
I was about to say the Steam Deck. Yeah.
They could try it out by having a Linux core running the next Xbox.
I like it.
Well, the next Xbox is essentially going to be an upgradable PC. Like, they've given up at this point.
They probably should, because I think PlayStation keeps kicking them in the teeth. So.
Well, no, they're trying to make deals with everyone to get like their games on it. So essentially everyone is thinking, like, I don't think they're going to get Nintendo on board with this. But otherwise, like, they're going to try, but I don't think it's going to happen because it's Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Like, Nintendo don't when it comes to that. But otherwise, essentially, they are going to make one system. That will be the last system. Mm-hmm. If I've got my facts correct on this, that would be the last system, and then you can swap out the parts. It is essentially a gaming PC.
Oh wow.
And they're going to try to get a bunch of services on it. They're going to work with Steam, they're going to work with all of these different people, or try to at least, to get any game you want on an Xbox except PlayStation, because PlayStation doesn't want to play ball.
Wow. It almost sounds like the framework laptop, where everything is just modular and can change out everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
It does until
they
make a new part that doesn't fit.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
even the PlayStation games, like the really big ones, are starting to come out on Steam now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I played Spider-Man. I waited for it to come out on Steam.
Okay, let me clarify this. The consoles I have are playable. Mm. But the most modern console I have is a Xbox 360 sitting behind you on one of the shelves back there. We got an N64. We got a GameCube. All of those still work. Matter of fact, I pulled the GameCube out for my daughter several years ago, and she just ran through all the games that we had on it for about a week or two, and then was like, okay, I'm done. And so I put it back in the box. I'm a PC master race when it comes to video games. The hell with consoles.
I prefer consoles.
Multiplayer sucks on consoles.
I don't play with others.
Yeah. Okay.
What he said is
he doesn't play well with others.
I want one interface.
Yeah.
It's the controller and a screen. I don't want any other distractions. I want to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the console. I don't want to play in my office. I mean, I play on the family TV like it's meant to be.
My only consoles, and I'm going to count the second one as a console, but my only consoles are the Nintendo Switch, because it, you have to, if you're a Nintendo fan like me, you have to get the Nintendo console, because that's the only place you're getting the Nintendo games.
Yeah.
And then the other one is my Steam Deck, because I got one of those little docks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even the official one, but it's one of those docks where you can even plug in like keyboards and everything if you want to the dang thing. But it's essentially turned the thing, because I use a old wireless Xbox controller mm-hmm. that I have. And I've Bluetooth paired that to the Steam Deck. So now it is one of my consoles in my living room. Perfect. Play Red Dead Redemption 2 on that thing all the dang time.
I've actually heard of other people doing that. That winds up being kind of the best of both worlds type scenario. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's, I just buy things on Steam now mm-hmm. because now I've got it on both situations. And occasionally, like I got L.A. Noire the other day for reasons that I won't go into. That way this doesn't go completely long. Sometimes you want to play an old game.
Yeah.
But I got L.A. Noire and I found out it does not sync the save files between the two things. So I went, well, I'm just playing it on the computer. Dang it. But yeah, other than those little situations, most of the time it really works well. So
I think I might have that game. I've got something noir in my Steam library.
Oh, it's good. So
I mean, the one that I'm thinking about, I mean, the graphics and all, and it really had that noir feeling to it. And mm-hmm. I picked up on some of the voice actors of people that I knew from television shows and what mm-hmm. have you. But I think I played maybe a total of an hour, and I haven't touched it in probably 8 years. Or whenever.
And it was a pioneer at the time. Yeah. Now you have people with the studios that have the cameras and people shooting actual scenes and stuff with every freaking AAA title you have. But at the time, that was the first game to do that. So,
yeah it was pretty cool. Can't you drive in that game?
You can.
Yeah, that's right. I couldn't drive worth shit. I ran all over cars and stuff. I tried to get from one part of the city to the other.
That's why I usually have my partner drive, because you can press a button and go to this place, and then they'll drive for you.
I think I wound up having to do that too, because I think I even got my 360 controller, my wireless one, and synced it with, because I had the dongle, and I was trying to use it, and I couldn't drive. I was like, yeah, never mind.
That's also that era of driving in any Rockstar game that existed, though. Mm-hmm. So don't feel too bad.
Mm-hmm. All right. FBI warning. Gmail, Outlook, and VPN users need to act now. Okay. This is talking about Medusa ransomware attacks that have impacted at least 300 critical infrastructure victims since June of 2021. I can't say I've run across any Medusa. The Medusa group uses sophisticated tactics, including social engineering and software vulnerability exploitation. The ransomware employs AES 256 encryption with RSA public key cryptography and can terminate over 200 Windows services. So, of course, the FBI, I'll just let that hang there for a second, the FBI. I hate the director of the FBI. Anyway. Their recommendations include enabling two-factor authentication for webmail, VPNs, and critical systems. Okay, I got to stop right there. Have you ever, now, if it's a VPN where I'm sitting here and I'm initiating, let's say I'm using PIA, private internet access. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can see where using two-factor might, is something you can use. But I've had situations where someone, I was filling out this tech sheet or something, and they were talking about using two-factor of site-to-site VPNs. And I'm like, how does that even work? I never figured it out. Hmm. But anyway, use long passwords without frequent required changes, maintaining separate backups of sensitive data, keeping systems updated and patched, monitoring for unauthorized use, implementing strict access controls, and disabling unused ports and command line capabilities. Disabling command line capabilities. On what? I mean, Windows, you still kind of need your command line.
As a typical user, probably not.
No, that's true.
I mean, I probably don't go a day without doing something in there, but
yeah.
And I know there's a way in the group policy that you can disable their ability to get to, you can disable their ability to basically do anything, just log in and an application launches. So
I can have somebody automatically log in, and the only thing they can use is Edge. You can lock them down that much.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's true. Well, I am a firm believer in 2FA on practically everything now.
Yeah.
It used to be where it was just a pain in the ass. And I was like, I don't want to do this.
Oh, it's still a pain in the ass.
It is. And there was a while there that I was getting aggravated at my RMM dashboard, because every time I'd log in, it'd be like, you need to do 2FA. And I have a setting in there that basically is like, hey, you know, I'm coming from this IP address. You're not supposed to prompt. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It will prompt me every single time. So I was like, okay, better safe than sorry. If somehow my machine got compromised here in my office, it's best that it still does 2FA.
Yeah.
Because if they got a hold of my dashboard, they got a hold of all my clients.
Mm-hmm.
So, which, I mean, we already have. You remember the name of that one company that had that breach that happened several years ago?
The RMM provider?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Kaseya.
Yeah, that's right.
That was, I will say, that was only affecting the MSPs who self-hosted.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that with them.
I'm not sure they can do it now, but back then, the bigger MSPs found it more fitting to self-host, because they could beef up the servers and make them a lot more responsive.
All right.
But it was some kind of something that used an API or exposed something with an API, and the hosted version, that wasn't an issue, but with the self-hosted Kaseya, it was.
Yeah, because didn't they have to issue new software downloads for like all of the CPEs, all of the workstations and stuff? And
I don't remember like how it all went down.
I remember
it was big.
It was big. It was
30,000 endpoints.
It was almost CrowdStrike big.
It took some people's world down.
Yeah. Which the reason why that came to mind is, okay, so you remember CrowdStrike taking down all the airlines and all of that, that stuff? They literally had a commercial on TV yesterday. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, y'all are still in business?
Nobody's paying attention. I bought the dip. I was like, all right, so they could go under. They're not that old of a company, but their name's on a Formula One car. They've got government contracts.
So you bought the dip.
I bought the dip, and it's doubled what I bought it at.
Oh, wow. Damn, I should have. I didn't think about it. Of course, I wasn't buying stocks at that point, so.
I usually don't think about it, but I was like, you know what? It's down.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it'll go. And it did.
I don't know. Maybe you need to buy some Tesla stock.
I already have Tesla stock.
You didn't buy the dip on it, though.
No, it is my average cost for a share. It's still lower than Tesla's been recently.
Wow.
I was buying it, $250 several years ago.
Yeah.
Then it split. So.
Oh, yeah. So you doubled your shares.
Yeah. So my cost per share is pretty low, like $170.
Oh, yeah. It's got to go massively under, which, I mean, it's heading in that direction anyway. They've lost 50% of their stock price in the last 30 days.
Yeah. Only 30 days.
Couldn't happen to a nicer company. Anyway.
And that's 2 minutes. There we go. Time.
Next article.
Next. Now,
I like Claude's insight into this one.
Yeah.
I particularly appreciate the expert who pointed out that the hackers must be laughing at this oversight. The fact that 75% of organizations were attacked multiple times in 12 months suggests we're stuck in a Groundhog Day of cyber incidents where we keep making the same mistakes. Maybe we should start a support group, Ransomware Victims Anonymous, where your first step is admitting you shouldn't have clicked that suspicious PDF converter link.
That is funny.
Also, it's almost comical that their advisory acknowledges social engineering is a primary attack vector, but doesn't emphasize security awareness training.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we, you know, don't click this. We're going to have to put in more software to keep you from. How about we just smack your hand every time you click the wrong link?
Has any of your clients ever asked you to give like a training session on stuff like that?
Nope.
You ever thought about offering it?
I've thought about it.
Yeah, me too.
I never have enough time to sit down and develop anything.
Me either.
And by the time I would get it developed, there's three new areas I need to focus on.
Yeah.
And add it to it.
Well, I guess I'm, and I mean, I have it in just conversations passing with, especially like the administrators and what have you. And mm-hmm. It's like, don't open email attachments that you're not expecting. You don't recognize stuff like that. You know, the basics.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure. Cause I mean, like I said, I've thought about it too. But I don't know how advantageous or helpful it would be. Because some people, you can beat them over the head 14 times and they're still going to open that damn attachment.
Yeah, I can't relate to stupid.
Mm-mm.
So I never see it coming.
Yeah. Google calls Gemma 3 the most powerful AI model you can run on one GPU. I'm surprised you haven't jumped on this one. You're running everything else.
I don't care.
Have you got that appointment? I just don't care.
Yeah, it's drinking from a fire hose.
Google has announced Gemma 3, an update to their open AI model family that can process text, images, and short videos across 35 plus languages. Google claims it's the, quote, world's best single accelerator model, end quote, outperforming competitors like Facebook's Llama, DeepSeek, and OpenAI when running on a single GPU. The model includes improved vision capabilities, handling high-res and non-square images. Didn't realize that was a problem. Plus a new safety classifier called Shield Gemma 2 to filter explicit or dangerous content. Google is offering cloud credits to support the model's adoption, including $10,000 worth of credits for academic researchers. However, the model's open status remains debatable due to usage restrictions in its license. So, Ben, you get yourself an academic research credit. $10,000 worth of credits.
I have to be honest, I've played with OpenAI and Anthropic.
Mm-hmm.
I've really not ever done anything with
any of the Google stuff, the Gemma?
None of Gemini, nothing from Google and nothing on Llama. I did run DeepSeek locally.
Mm-hmm.
It was boring. I mean, whatever model I was running, you know, it's slow because I'm running on my GPU.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't.
You know what you need?
Fast enough.
You need one of the new M4 Macs because they claim, especially
you
now,
have my address. Send it
just,
there.
Just send it there. Okay. All right. Apparently, if you the Mac Daddy is the new M4, either the M3 Ultra or the M4 Max. I believe that's correct. Mac Studios. Well, granted, they start at $2,000. So, but. I mean, I figured you might have that in your spare pocket if you wanted to run some models.
No.
Ben's going to hit me.
No, if I wanted to buy something to run models locally, it would be one of those NVIDIA devices that we talked about shows back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what that thing was called.
I don't either.
It's the news moves so fast.
I know.
But that was $3,000.
That's right. I remember that. Because we were like $3,000. I remember you saying, oh, you know, it might be worth it.
And I think we talked about, was it Leo Laporte stuffed $100,000 in a box, in a PC?
No, that was Linus Tech Tips.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, they made basically a table PC that was like $100,000.
How much people spend on on desktop setups, like $3,000 for this little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can't envision. I saw somebody decked out one of the new Mac Studios to the max. You know, the maximum amount of memory, the maximum amount of storage, everything. $14,000. But it'll run anything you want it to run.
Yeah.
Any model.
And they'll release a new one next year.
They will. Well, that's the thing about the Mac Studios. They were lagging behind because I think when it came out, it had the, I want to say it still had the M1s might have been the M2. This is a substantial upgrade. If that's something you're in the market for, I am not. If anything, I would buy maybe one of the new Mac Minis, but I don't have a use case for it. I mean, that one I got over there, the M2 Pro, does everything I need it to do. Edits video, great. Audio editing, fantastic. So, but see, secretly, that's what Sam's doing. Sam's going to show up on one of the episodes, and he's going to have a $14,000 Mac Studio that he wants to, you know, pimp out and or show us everything that like he's doing with AI.
Or like a $9,000 MacBook Pro.
Yeah. This is my new computer.
I have enough people in my life that hiss at the very two letters AI being put in succession that I just, anything AI that I do, I just stay quiet. I'm like, nah, I'm not dealing with this.
You know, I used to be on the bandwagon along with the guys at Grumpy Old Geeks about it's not AI, it's machine learning, but now it is AI. We can't say that anymore.
There is some reasoning.
Mm-hmm. See, back then it was just decision trees.
Right.
It was literally ML.
Yeah.
But everybody kept calling it AI. And it's like, it's just a fancy phone tree. But now this stuff does have a little bit of reasoning in it.
Mm-hmm. That's like on that first article, they're talking about Plex not having raised prices in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the fact that they've maintained their prices for a decade while continuously adding features is pretty impressive. They're like the Costco hot dog of media servers. That was AI generated summary.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't think machine learning. It's machine learning, but it's so granular now that you can't see the granules.
Mm-hmm.
It's just powder. Yeah. So fine. It's getting to a point where it's becoming useful.
You don't have Netflix anymore, do you?
I do not.
Okay. Sam, do you have Netflix?
I am a wrestling fan, Donovan. Of course I have. Oh, wait a minute.
What am I saying? What am I saying? I finally stopped being his pimp at the end of the year.
Yes. Now I jump in my TARDIS and watch Netflix over in Britain when I want to watch everything else. Anyway.
Yeah. Prank caller. No, this made me think. There is a show called Pantheon that I started watching last week. It's an animated show. The one with,
oh, okay. So it's not the one with Jeff Goldblum. Okay. Sorry.
No. I watched one episode of that one where he basically is playing Zeus.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible.
I don't remember what that was called, but I couldn't watch that one either.
Yeah. It was horrible. And I love Jeff. So yeah. it was horrible. But no, Pantheon is an animated, matter of fact, it's an AMC series. That I kept seeing it on Netflix and I was like, okay, I got to watch this. Two seasons now. And it's about uploaded intelligence. And it's about how these corporations are breaking into essentially uploading people's minds into the computers and all the menagerie of crap that's happening there. And they discovered there's an issue with the uploads and stuff like that. And you're looking at it from a standpoint of this is what would happen if AI turned into Skynet, except this, instead of being AIs, are UIs. That's what they call them, uploaded intelligence, because it's literally a person that they upload. Now, not to give too much away, but the way they have to do the upload is horrific. They cut open the head, and they literally laser the brain layer by layer as they're copying it. So for you to be uploaded, you have to be killed. So I would, we finished the first season last night. Probably won't start on second season till tomorrow or Friday or this weekend, but there's other storylines going on in it, and it's wild. And it's a good thing that it's animated, because I don't think they could have pulled off what they're doing in this if it had been live action.
That would have been expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Way expensive.
Kind of reminds me of the comedy Upload that Amazon has. If you never watched that one.
I was
before.
Trying to remember
I've
the name
never
of that
finished
show.
It, but I need to.
We never finished it either.
Has it been continued?
I think there are three seasons, I
might
believe.
Be at this point.
I know there's at least two. We couldn't get past, I couldn't finish the first season, I don't think, or either we did, and I couldn't start the second one.
I could probably watch it again, and it'd be like the first time.
I mean, mine was distraction, not dislike. Like, I constantly get distracted by other shows and go, well, I don't have time.
Well, see, I like the star of the show, Robbie Amell. He's cousin to Stephen Amell, who mm-hmm. played Green Arrow.
Okay.
So, and those two have done, there's a movie called Code 8, and then they did a sequel that's on Netflix. Those are really good, too.
Oh, that's right. He showed up at one of the Raw things, and they went, here's Robbie Amell, star of, because they're doing that a bunch of times on Raw now, where the celebrities that show up in the audience are a bunch of Netflix stars.
Like, yeah, it's really good. And they did the first movie on a shoestring budget, and the reception was so good that they got a little bit more and and did the special effects a little better. Okay, so Gemini Live will learn to peer through your camera lens in a few weeks. But what if I don't want it to? Google is preparing to launch an enhanced version of Gemini Live that will include real-time video processing capabilities previously demonstrated as Project Astra. Coming later in March 20... How old is this article?
Yeah, I was wondering if that was a...
Is that a typo?
Problem in the summary or a typo in the article?
Yeah, because this says March 2024, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be March 2025.
Yeah, I don't think this was available. No. Anything like this was available in 2024.
So it says this update would allow users to show objects to Gemini through the camera or share their screen, enabling interactive conversations about what the AI sees. The feature will be available through the Gemini app on Android devices, but will require a $20 monthly AI premium subscription. And while this advancement is expected to increase operating costs and losses for Google, the company views it as a strategic move to compete with OpenAI and gain market share in the AI space. Mm-hmm. And then the my take. Oh boy, just what we needed, an AI that can watch us through our phones.
ChatGPT can already do this.
That's true. I mean, we both played with that. Like, I took a picture of my kitchen and I said, what is this? And it says, well, that's a toaster and that's a... Mm-hmm. I was like... Oh, that's scary.
My wife and I were playing Connect Four in the bed, and I was like,
is that what they call it now? Oh, okay.
God.
It's one version.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't know what book you read.
Okay.
So I started it up, and I showed it and I was like, what? And she's sitting right next to me, and I was like, we have to be quiet. And it's like, okay. Like, I'm red. What's my best move? And it told me where to put it.
Oh, wow.
Because I will say the thing, I have tested out Gemini because I'm curious. I do that stuff. And it is really wild talking to the thing. Like, mm-hmm. I remember having just a standard conversation with it. And I was trying to see how far, because I needed to, I can't remember what it was, but it was just like a standard piece of information that I needed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let's see if I can trip this thing up. It eventually did trip up, but it was one of those things where I was going to go, let's see how far I can push this and stuff. But it's wild having a conversation with a computer like that. Like, we're getting into Star Trek territory now.
For sure. I mean, growing up as a kid, and always being interested in technology, this is the kind of stuff I dreamed about mm-hmm. having. And now I'm like, be careful what you wish for.
But I want glasses. I have to wear glasses on my face anyway. Let me have it. To give me the promise that Google Glass gave me so long ago, where if I look at a human being, they'll give me a little thing of, mm-hmm. oh, this is this person's name, because you can't remember proper nouns.
Yeah, and that way you don't look like a glass hole. Mm. Because that's what everybody looked like when they were wearing those
yeah, Google glasses. I remember when Google emailed me and it said, oh, they're finally here and you can order one. And I was like, no, thanks.
Yeah, because they were like 1,500.
Yeah. I was like, that's nope.
Crazy.
That's a fucking toy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they've now made the tech to where it can show up on the actual mm-hmm. glasses themselves. Instead of you having to mm-hmm. have a Dragon Ball Z viewer on to the side of your face.
Okay. Apple will soon support encrypted RCS messaging with Android users. And the crowd went wild. So Apple has announced upcoming support for end-to-end encrypted, also known as E2EE, RCS messaging between iPhone and Android users. This development comes after the GSM Association updated RCS specifications to include E2EE based on the message layer security protocol. Apple spokesperson Shane Bauer confirmed that E2EE RCS support will be added to iOS, iPadOS, macOS, and watchOS in future updates. And while Apple's iMessage and Google Messages already support E2EE within their own ecosystems, this new standard enables secure cross-platform messaging between different devices and operating systems for the first time. Because last year, in one of the iOS updates, they started supporting RCS to Android devices. So that meant if you sent a video to an Android user, it didn't get compressed and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the downside was, you know, for all this espionage that you were probably needing to send messages back and forth between you and an Android. I mean, number one, if you're going to do espionage, you don't use an Android device, okay? But they were not encrypted. Or you can just do like, you know, us sensible people. Use Signal. That way it doesn't matter if it's an Android or an iOS device. It's going to be encrypted no matter what.
Or Linux with PGP. If anybody could ever fucking figure that out.
I know, right? Oh, man, I remember years and years and years ago trying to do that in old email programs. It's like generate mm-hmm. my key and put this in here and have the little lock and all that. And
yeah, it'd take you 5 years to gather the intelligence, 15 seconds to send it, mm-hmm. and 17 years to help the other user on the other end figure out the PGP to
decrypt it. Yeah, who had to get your public key.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thanks.
Take a couple of presidencies to do that.
Mm. All right. I love the title of this one. Does the world even want Dig in 2025?
I have completely forgotten what Dig even was. I remember it as a name, and I can't remember if they sold electronics or it was just tech news.
It was Slashdot on steroids is what it was.
It was Reddit before Reddit, essentially.
That is true. That is true.
Because I used it all the time. That was a high school mainstay.
What happened to that?
Well, Kevin sold it off. He sold it. And then, I remember when Dig went live, and I think this was when they did their IPO. And I remember, because I was still back at CityNet at this point, and he was on the cover of some tech magazine, the $60 million man or something like that, because he had just hit the mother load with this thing. Mm. And because the system was designed, and unfortunately, people figured out how to game it, but articles would get posted and then you would up or down vote, very similarly to the way stuff is done on Reddit. But it was revolutionary at the time. Nobody had ever really done that before. And that, unless I'm missing some information, Digg.com, and he always said the reason why they didn't go with Digg.com is because somebody else already owned it and they didn't have the money to buy it away from them. So they added the second G, which I think was a smart move anyway because it made it look unique.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But if it hadn't been for Digg, Kevin wouldn't be the multimillionaire that he is today. That's my opinion anyway, because it all started with Digg, because I remember when he was still back on the screensavers as the hacker dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it says that Kevin Rose, Digg's original founder, is attempting to revive the platform in 2025. He is partnering with former rival and Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, I guess is how you say his name. The new Digg promises to be, quote, the front page of the internet with superpowers, focusing particularly on making life easier for moderators through AI tools. The platform aims to compete with Reddit, which has faced its own challenges since going public, including concerns about censorship and increased commercialization. The relaunch is banking heavily on elder millennial nostalgia and promises to improve the community management experience. But if you go to it right now, the front page of the internet now with superpowers. Yep. What is that? Sign up for early access?
Yeah. Or for, early access when invites go live.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like, I mean, that's accounted. There's 29.2 million people waiting on an invite.
It was popular.
That could be a different number.
It was really popular whenever it came out. And I mean, I remember going there and hanging out a lot. It replaced Slashdot for me until it got to the point where it was being gamed too much. And there was also all kind of controversies that happened around it. And then Kevin had to try to figure out how to fix the gaming problem and all. And I don't know, I guess maybe he finally just gave up and sold it off to somebody. And then it just went down the shitter, as far as I can remember. Hmm. But I mean, I'll check it out. It's not, it's not going to be one of those where it's going to be my daily go-to like Slashdot was, or the way it used to be years ago. But
yeah, I don't even have a go-to anymore lately. I quit Twitter.
Really?
Well, I mean, I just quit opening it.
I quit
thinking about it.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't close an account or anything, but
yeah,
I think
it's actually recommended.
My mental health has seen an improvement.
You should probably listen to Sam's latest episodes of Samuel's Thoughts about how he curates his social media stuff. It was actually a response to my Call Me Donovan episode. So he has an interesting take on the way he does things. Yeah. It's actually recommended that if you get off Twitter, to not close your account, because at some point somebody can open that account back up as you. And so it's best just to back away and don't do anything with it anymore. Just make sure you got a strong password, 2FA or whatever, so nobody can get into it.
Oh, I still use the AI. What's the name of that one?
Grok?
Yeah. Every once in a while, I just want to see what it says.
But it's wrong 98% of the time.
Okay. I'm not asking it for life advice.
Except when Elon himself asks it questions and it basically blasts him.
It tells him the truth.
Says
he's full of shit.
Yeah, he doesn't like that. And Sam started his timer again. That was 2002. Next article. They curdle
last time.
They curdle like milk. Warner Brother DVDs from 2006 to 2008 are rotting away in their cases. An article over at Ars Technica. They have confirmed a widespread issue with DVDs manufactured between 06 and 08 where discs are experiencing premature deterioration or disc rot. The problem affects various titles, with symptoms ranging from complete unplayability to freezing at random points during playback. Some affected titles are no longer in print or available digitally, making the issue particularly concerning for collectors. WBD is offering to replace defective discs where possible, or exchange them for titles of similar value when replacements aren't available. Problem is believed to stem from a specific manufacturing plant in Pennsylvania. Hey, just hang Pennsylvania out to dry right there. That allegedly used subpar materials, though WBD hasn't confirmed this theory. That is interesting. I have always heard that, you know, when compact disc and DVDs and all of that came out, it was like, these things will last forever. And then 20 years later, they're like, yeah, about that. Not so much. Now, the pressed ones will last longer, but like your burnable CDs, your burnable DVDs and all that, they will not.
When I worked for a bank, they did backups of some kind of imaging system, like the machine or the repository that held every image of every check.
Oh, wow.
Backups on a DVD plus R or something like that. After a couple of years, I discovered
we can't read them.
I can't fucking read these. So I was like, all right, just call that data recovery company in Adel. And so they did. And he turned it around in a couple of days. And I stopped in there. I was like, what'd you do? He was like, I just tweaked the firmware on the CD drive. So that the laser's a little brighter and it can tell the difference between the pits and the lands, and it reads it.
Oh, wow.
Increase the sensitivity, basically.
But at some point.
At some point, it would become unreadable.
Yeah.
But it was too old for a standard drive, but it could be read on a modified drive.
Yeah, that's a neat hack. I like that.
I never would have thought about it.
Never would have thought about it either.
Well, that's how he made thousands of dollars.
Hey.
CDs from a bank.
You got it. I still want crystal storage. Of course, apparently you can store a shit ton in DNA, so.
That's probably already there.
Yeah, probably.
Microsoft's remote desktop app is being killed soon. This one confused me.
Yeah.
So what they're talking about is they've announced that its remote desktop app will be discontinued as of May 27th, 2025. This functionality is being moved to what Microsoft calls the Windows app. It says, yes, that's really the name they chose. This consolidation began in September 2024 as part of Microsoft's effort to unify their remote connectivity services. Users will need to transition to the Windows app to maintain access to Windows 365, Azure Virtual Desktop, and Microsoft DevBox. However, there are some caveats. Users of remote desktop connection and remote desktop services will need to continue using their current methods until these features are fully integrated into the Windows app. Okay, great. I didn't want to stop using them anyway. I mean, there's nothing wrong with remote desktop services and the remote desktop connection. I already got that stuff figured out, you know. I create my connection, create a shortcut. Boom. Yeah. I'm good.
So you guys do use this because I was curious about that. I know in the past, like when I've had you help me all the way up here, the way from Georgia, right? You've had me install something. So the whatever this is something that you guys genuinely use
every day,
regularly. Then,
yeah, this is built in. You can remote control from any Windows PC, but you can only remote control the pros or the servers because the home versions don't allow you to do it. Now,
okay.
There's a way, like you can go into a machine, and I think it's up under, you do a search for remote assistance, and you can actually like put my email address in, and it'll email me a link that when I click on it, it'll open up. And it probably goes through some Microsoft Relay service that would let me get control of your machine. What I've had you do in the past is use a TeamViewer style program called AnyDesk, or now I use one called RustDesk that I actually run my own server and do it that way. Because what the difference is, remote desktop itself takes control of the desktop. Like if I was going to literally use remote desktop to remote into your computer, it would lock your screen and you couldn't see what I was doing. But that's the reason why we use programs like RustDesk, AnyDesk, TeamViewer, because then it lets you continue to see as well as me see what you're doing and what I'm doing and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, there's other use cases. Like I've got a client that uses remote desktop. I've created shortcuts on their desktops, on their workstations. They remote into an actual, basically an RDS, remote desktop server, to run certain real estate program.
Right.
There's like three or four of them that do that. So whenever we built that thing, of course, I had to buy the cows for the remote desktop and all that other kind of stuff. You know, consolidation is okay, but Windows app? I mean, what are they trying to make? a Swiss Army knife of, this will do everything. Will it run Linux?
Yeah. It's not Windows. The app itself is not Windows.
So right.
Don't call it the Windows app.
Yeah, don't call it Windows app.
Unless you're going to change the name of the operating system.
I mean, we already have a Windows app. It's called Windows 11. It's a terrible app.
I did think about the absolute headaches you guys would have to go through if you had to run someone through this, like over the phone or something like that. Go to the Windows app. What? I'm on Windows. No, the Windows app.
The start button?
I'm running Windows right now.
The Windows icon on the bottom of the screen?
Exactly.
At that point, I would just remote in to their machine and show them how to do it.
How to go to the Windows.
Make them a shortcut. Go, all right, next time you want it, just click that.
I mean, it reminds me of a conversation I was having with an old boss. He was he decided to start a dial-up ISP in the late 90s after I tried to encourage him to do it a couple of years earlier, but he decided to get into it. And they were telling me about one of the scenarios, and this is very common. They were on the phone with someone, and they were like, okay, well, you've got your mouse. Yes. Well, I need you to right-click on whatever. And they hesitated, and they hesitated. And basically what the person did is they wrote the word click on a notepad beside their mouse. And I was like, yeah. Tech support's fun. And And he says with the sarcasm dripping, it's really fun when you can't see their fucking screens. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a scenario where you've literally like brought the app up on your own computer and you're walking through it yourself to try to help them?
Network settings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't connect. Well, I can't remote in because you're not connected. Yeah. I've had to bring up dialog boxes. I think I've even had to search for had to use her some Windows 7. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a 7 box to look at. I had to search the internet for pictures of dialog boxes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, you should be able to right click on this and it should pop up this. Well, I'm not getting that. Oh, fuck me.
All you hear is.
I wrote click.
Mm. All right. What now?
All right. CISA, because that's the way I roll and pronounce it that way, scrambles to contact fired employees after court rules layoffs unlawful. Did you put this one in there?
I don't think so.
I don't remember sending this one to the system.
I could have.
I think you may have done it.
No, this is not one that I would have sent.
But it was done a day ago. I didn't.
It might have been an email hanging out in the box.
Okay. Well, it doesn't have a date on it. I think our system needs some refining.
I looked at post dates and author. I don't see any options to change that or display it in Blooded.
Because I'm not even getting the post date on these.
And yeah, it's not displayed. I don't see any option of what to display. Could be part of the theme.
I'll go look.
I made you an admin for a reason.
I know. Well, I've been playing with this software for a month, so I kind of know a little bit about it. Okay, so if this is timely, I don't know, but I do know that they basically were gutting the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which is what CISA stands for. But according to TechCrunch, they're frantically, maybe fanatically too, trying to reconnect with over 130 former employees after a federal court declared their layoffs unlawful. The ruling made by U.S. District Judge James Breder, requires the Trump administration to reinstate federal probationary employees who were terminated across various government agencies. The layoffs were part of a broader initiative to reduce the federal work, blah, 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 blah. CISA is now actively seeking these former employees, acknowledging they lack contact information from many affected individuals. The agency has posted a message on their website requesting former employees to reach out, asking them to send password-protected attachments with their personal information. Rehired employees will be placed on administrative leave with full pay and benefits. So,
we want you back so we can pay you.
Yeah, we want you back so we can send you back home, but we're going to send you home with a paycheck. And get this, how many companies don't have contact information for their employees? I mean, we had contact. Whenever I ran CityNet, we had contact information for every employee. I had their cell phone numbers. I had their home numbers. And if I didn't have them, City Hall had them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe Elon's right.
Time will tell.
Almost had a heart attack hearing that phrase come from your mouth.
Don't worry.
I think this was the situation where, oh my God, I'm going to have to try to remember his name now. Why did I start this? Proper nouns. I made that joke earlier. The guy from Shark Tank that owns a sports team.
He sold the Mavericks.
Okay, he sold the Mavericks.
I'll let you keep guessing at the name, though.
How dare you?
I believe it's Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
Cuban, yes. I think this is the same situation where he went, you know, at some point they're going to need you back anyway. And that's when I suggest that you become a group of people that are, what would the word for it be? Essentially independent contractors. Mm-hmm. He said, and if all of you get together and do this, I will fund your independent contracting. Like, he saw cash in his eyes, essentially, because that's what Mark Cuban does. But I think this was the one layoff situation where he was talking about that because he was like, they'll need you. And I'm willing to make you guys more money than you ever dreamed, you know, while making him money too, probably. But
well, the one thing I can say of Mark Cuban and billionaires, Mark Cuban if you can legitimately say that there is a good billionaire, it's Mark Cuban. None of the rest of them are anywhere close to being as good as he is.
There's probably a bunch of good ones, and they're good because we don't know their
names.
We
don't know their, yeah, there you go.
Yes, there we go.
Because, I mean, Cuban is the one that started that prescription company.
The cost plus drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and stuff like that. I mean, he seems to really want to help society.
Yeah.
Not, you know, rape and pillage.
So, occasionally he has hot takes that I roll my eyes about, but otherwise, yeah, that's,
yeah.
That is completely separated from good things that he's done. So,
I mean, hell, I'm not a billionaire and I have hot takes that he rolls his eyes at. So,
I mean, yes, but.
Oh, well, gentlemen, and I do use that term loosely. That was the last story. So what do you think? It was a bunch of nothing, right?
Yeah.
You know, I really, sometimes I have to wonder about tech shows like Grumpy Old Geeks and Twit and all of that. It's like, there are weeks. There's a reason why we do this every 2 weeks, not every week. It's hard to pull some, I mean, there's tech news and then there's interesting tech news. And I can't say every one of these were interesting, but they were there.
I mean, our access to tech news is the same as anybody else's.
Yeah.
So it's just the same river of maybe this is interesting to somebody.
Yeah.
Publication.
So. And then our take.
Yeah.
I mean, we are who we are. And plus we live in the deep South, and somehow another Kentucky is considered the South. I still don't get that, but.
Have you ever been to Kentucky?
I've not been to Kentucky.
Like the West Virginia side of Kentucky.
Tyler's been to Kentucky twice.
It's,
and he told me it's definitely South.
Yeah.
It's definitely rural.
Yeah.
It may not be South because it still fucking snows up there, but but it's definitely rural.
Hey, it snows down here now, I mean, apparently.
Yeah. Washing machines in the front yard.
Sam, get your damn washing machine out of the yard.
Mine's in my.
Oh, it's a beautiful country up there.
Sam's going to be like, ad kissing. Shut the fuck up.
Beautiful country up there, though. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place, but there's a lot of hillbillies. But there's a lot of, I don't know if I've ever been to a major city in Kentucky. I've always been to the,
let's see,
to the hills.
What have you got there? Lexington?
Yeah, Lexington is probably my closest major city.
Yeah, that's where a major airport would be, right? Or is it somewhere else? Tyler flew into Kentucky.
That is.
But yeah. I can't remember which airport he flew into.
My son's first trip to Kentucky Fried Chicken was in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
How ironic.
Close to the original, but not quite.
I used to love KFC. I mean, I still do. It's just, if anybody knows me, I hate complicated ordering. And
I love apps.
If I can order something online, that's like before Sonic closed down here. The only way I would get Sonic is on the app, because then all I'd have to do is drive up into the little thing, click what stall I'm in, and just wait for my food instead of, you know, trying to explain, no, I don't want damn tomatoes on the, you know.
Yeah, my wife knows that if she wants to save time by going through the drive-thru, she's going to have to drive. She's going to have to order. I will not go through a drive-thru unless I am by myself and I know exactly what number to order.
Oh, the thing that irritates me is, and it's not just my wife, but it's anybody, but usually it's my wife. Going through the drive-thru, we've already got it in our head. Okay, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that. She sees something on the menu. She's like, ooh. And I'm like, no, you wanted the fucking half pound of roast beef. That's what you're getting. I know they got a new fish sandwich. We're not doing that.
Oh, fuck. Has she tried that fish sandwich from Arby's?
No.
That is the only thing I've ever returned to a fast food restaurant.
Really?
It was that disgusting.
Oh, God. Now, the only thing that I ever get, Oriana and I get the roast beef, the cheese, roast beef and cheddar. Beef and cheddar, yes. Lee gets the half pound without the cheese, only eats the meat. And so I take the bun.
Got to be a name for that.
Weird. But I take the bun and I usually use it for like a chicken sandwich or something that I make here at the house because that bun is really good. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that's the only thing we ever get from it. And curly fries. Gotta have curly fries. Yeah. Absolutely love curly fries.
Yeah, probably once a quarter, I'll go to Arby's and get a $14 sandwich. They used to call it the Big Montana. Now it's just lame. It's, I think it's regular and medium and half pound. I used to like ordering the Big Montana.
they had a sandwich I wanted to try, but I never got around to it. But it came with an au jus because I love sandwiches.
That was the French dip.
That was it.
It used to be 2 for $6 on Thursdays.
Yeah. Do they still have that?
As I know,
I'm still going to have to try that.
It's good.
So welcome to the eating podcast.
This is just we're freelancing.
Yeah, we're freelancing. Yeah, I love beef and cheddar, and we'll go there about once a month or so.
My wife likes the beef and cheddar, but she doesn't like the onion bun, the onion roll. So I have to special order beef and cheddar on a regular bun.
What is wrong with her?
I guess she can taste the onion.
She doesn't like onion at all.
I don't like onion at all, but those are caramelized. Fine.
What is wrong with you?
I don't like onion.
How can you not like onion?
Donovan, I have bad news.
Some people hate cilantro.
Oh, I can't stand cilantro.
But some people love it.
Actually,
agrees with you or it doesn't.
I'm not one of those where it tastes like soap, though. I just don't like it.
Donovan. Gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So it's just one, you know, the flavor agrees with you or it doesn't.
Don't worry.
For me, onion is not agreeable.
Growing up, I couldn't stand onions. I hated onions. I was like, you know, if I got a McDonald's burger, better not be onions on it. You know, Now I'm like, give me a fucking onion. I'll saute that bitch up in some butter.
Oh, yeah. I'll eat them cooked.
Yeah.
But I will not have them raw.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I do prefer them sauteed, but I will eat them raw. And to me, the better onion raw are they call them red, but they look purple. It's the ones that Wendy's puts on their burgers. Mm. They're really good.
It's nice that they use red onion so I can find it when I'm looking to pick it off.
You can always tell them no onions.
I'm not complicating that order. And I bet half the time I've asked for no onions, they just put onion on.
Have you ever used the app for Wendy's? When's the last time you've been in there? Because I have been told that there are no people in there anymore.
That'd be good. That means nobody's racist.
They use kiosks now. You walk in there and you order your food on a kiosk and then a person does bring it to you.
All the local McDonald's are that way too.
Okay. I haven't been in any of them in several years, which I'm the kind of person, number one, I hate self-checkout. We know this. I have established that. I think it's ridiculous that you put self-checkouts in Walmart and grocery stores and all of that. Can't stand it. Won't do it. But a kiosk in a fast food restaurant.
Perfect.
Is perfect.
Yeah.
That makes the most sense to me because the difference between a grocery store and me having to scan my items, basically doing the job of the person that should be getting paid to do this job because you didn't lower the prices.
Right.
For me to do that job, you know, how much am I getting paid by the hour to check my own groceries out? But making the decision of I want this, but I don't want onions and I don't want this, but add that on a screen makes so much sense versus
you
me
don't
trying
have to go back there and make it.
No. And I don't have to stand there and tell the person in front of me that I want this, but take all these four other things off. And they look at me like, what?
And then they have to call a manager to figure out how to take the onions off and put mustard on half the sandwich. Yeah.
Yep. Sam's over there thinking we're a bunch of entitled assholes over here.
I'm the one sitting there going, apparently our people are way better in Kentucky or something. I don't know.
That's because they're all on drugs.
All I will say is I did give up on Taco Bell because I kept on telling them I just want a crunch wrap with meat and cheese and that's it. And after about the third time that they couldn't do that for me, I went, okay, I'm done.
I gave up on Taco Bell when every time I'd go through there just to buy something was $50 because their prices went nuts.
That's Arby's as well.
Actually, Arby's is one of the cheaper places for us to eat. I can buy those two sandwiches, three fries, and that half pound for $25.
How many people does that feed?
Three of us.
For $25?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's still too much.
I agree, but whenever I go through and I'm like, okay, we want three chalupas. This is a Taco Bell. Three chalupa supremes, and then I want an extra four soft tacos, is $38 from Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. And when that started happening, I was like, nope. You know, if I want Mexican, I will go to a real Mexican restaurant and pay $14 for the plate of food that's actually really good.
December of 2023, I took my son up with me to Atlanta to open up a new client office.
Mm-hmm.
We were rolling around that night, and we found a Five Guys that was open. Cool. I got a burger, fries, and a drink. He got a burger, fries, and a drink. I paid $37.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the last time I've been to Five Guys.
I have heard that they're fantastic, but
great. I knew it was good food, but they were also the only place open.
I mean, it's like
anytime me and mom go down for Dragon Con in Atlanta, mm-hmm. we'll go to the Five Guys near the hotel. But that's about the only time we get one of those. Ah, yes.
I have never been to one.
I thought, shit, I think I could probably buy the potatoes, a cooker, a grill, the meat, all the toppings, the buns.
Mm-hmm.
Probably spend $50 or $60, but I can make burgers all night.
Oh, all right, gentlemen. I think it's time for us to get out of here. Sam, where can everybody find you in your podcast and everything that you do creatively online?
Well, you can find all of my stuff at tscn.tv. Since Donovan specifically plugged it, you can find Samuel's thoughts over at tscn.tv/ST for Samuel's thoughts for my latest episode, number 169, if I remember properly, a response to what Donovan put out into the ether about how do you stay sane while in the politically stabby environment that we happen to be in. So that exactly. was my response. And if you want to find me elsewhere, Twitter/X, I don't get in that argument. You guys can have those battles on those hills on your own. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitch at TSCN Sam. Although TikTok will probably be done by Sunday, but that's a conversation we can have if it does happen, because you never know anymore. So.
Oh, I doubt it. Ben's nowhere, so.
Yeah, I mean, you could reach out, but nobody's listening.
Yeah, nobody's listening. All right.
Walk out on your porch and yell. That's how you get old.
That's it. But the only one that I use right now is essentially Blue Sky. So you can find me at Call Me Donovan on Blue Sky. That's one cool thing is you can actually use, I think it's at callmedonovan.com, actually. You can use domains as your username on there. Instead of it being like something.bluesky.app.
Yeah.
So it's at callmedonovan.com. And if you have questions or comments about this show, you can email podcast@southgeeknews.com, or you can call and leave a voicemail, or you can send a text, and that number is 229-234-1307. We do have a membership tier. It is a measly $5 per month, and what that will get you is this show, but also all the extraneous bullshit that I cut out and dumped in because I didn't feel like it probably fit in the main show. So if that's something that interests you, just go to southgeeknews.com and become a member for $5 per month. So for me, for Ben, and for Sam, thank you for joining us. And Sam let me know that he might be able to be a more frequent contributor and a guest host on the show. So moving forward, you might see a little bit more of him.
Or at least here.
Well, here. Yeah, that's true. I don't know if you'll see more of him.
Maybe we should start adding video to this. So we don't have to accommodate.
Do I need to start?
You do lots of hand motions still.
I'll have to buy some more equipment. I don't have that money. Not right now.
Well, then you'll have to stop doing this on screen as if they can see you.
They use their imagination.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And with that, we're going to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. We enjoyed producing it for you. 2 weeks from now, we'll be back, hopefully. We'll see you then. Take care. Bye-bye.
This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting TiftonMediaWorks.com.